Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, as much as we love our jobs, it's always something new and fun when we get to talk to actors who aren't on soaps. So I had the pleasure of speaking to Marla Gibbs, who was cast as Paulina's mother, Olivia, on Days of Our Lives. Now, I was a huge fan of the Jeffersons, so it feels like I grew up knowing who Marla is. So I could say I was pretty excited to talk to her. So first of all, she told me she is a huge fan of Days, watches every day, which I just found delightful. She says she knew the cast by their character names and was also happy to see Galen Gehring, with whom she worked on Passions. But she missed seeing Ben and Sierra, as she referred to them, but Rob Wilson and Victoria Konofal. So she's hoping to get an invite back to the show and interact with that duo. Marla had a very busy summer. She turned 90 and she also got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But she told me she chooses to vibrate on the age of 30, because at 30, you have your whole life ahead of you. I joked that I would adopt the same philosophy, but she told me I couldn't take 30, so I chose 28, because that's a great age in my opinion.
All right, well, I'll take 29 if it's still available then. I'll tell you what was hands down the most fun interview I got to do for the new issue. It was talking to GH's Ken Schreiner, who had me absolutely cracking up as he described what is poised to happen this coming week when Scott and Obrecht head off on a romantic tropical getaway, with Scott unaware that Obrecht has another agenda for the trip, which is to kill Peter. And that is arguably the other biggest bit of soap news to discuss, which is that as of Monday's episode, we can officially say that Wes Ramsey's Peter did not die at Finn's hands. He has made his way to Nixon Falls and discovered that Nina is keeping the secret of Sunny being alive and is using it to blackmail her, which is why Nina calls her Aunt Liesl, in the hopes that Obrecht will go ahead and take care of that for her by taking care of Peter permanently. So we kind of know that the Nixon Falls storyline is hurtling towards some kind of end. And I do think it was a good soapy twist to have Peter be the first person to catch on to Nina's secret. So I'm sure we'll be following the goings on there with a lot of interest in the weeks to come.
Oh, I definitely will. Bringing Peter back was very inspired. And really, just reading that interview with Ken made me so excited to see the story that you mentioned with him and Obrecht. So we're also going to see some movement in the Brady, Chloe, Philip triangle on Days. I feel the show has been flirting with these pairings, but suffice it to say that Philip will not like it one bit when Chloe and Brady get stranded together in Pennsylvania on a business trip. On a side note, I spoke to Eric Martzoff, who plays Brady, and he is from Pennsylvania. So I asked if he thought it was a shout out to his home state that they wind up there, and he says he wondered the same thing, so that's something I need to get to the bottom of. And something else that I'm really invested in already is where Young and Restless is going with Adam and Sally. So at the risk of upsetting the Shaddam fan base, I have to say, I think this is going to be on-camera gold.
I think the chemistry between Courtney Hope and Mark Grossman was there from the get-go, and whether it's for the long haul or just for a fun chapter, I am so excited to see what the show has planned for them. To me, it's the best possible way that YNR could have answered the question, what are we going to do with Sally? Because, you know, the thing with Jack didn't really go anywhere. She's been busted for scheming with Tara, and she's made a host of new enemies in the process. And I just love the ripple effect across the canvas that could happen if Adam and Sally were running around wreaking havoc together. I am very much looking forward to it.
Well, another interview we have in this issue is with Bold and Beautiful's executive producer, head writer Bradley Bell, who tells us he is thrilled to have today's guest on his show. It's Ted King, who recently debuted in the role of Jack Finnegan. So let's check in with him and see how it's going. Hi, Ted.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Very excited to talk to you today. It's been a while.
I feel the same way.
Let's start back on the East Coast. You were raised in Bethesda, Maryland. How would you characterize your childhood, and what was it like to grow up there?
At that point, my parents had split up, so it was just my mother and I living in a one-bedroom apartment, and she was doing the best she could to raise me, but I had a lot of time alone. That was when I learned how to cook, and then other than that, I was getting into trouble outside with some friends in the neighborhood. That was my first job. I got my first paper route there. And then my mother moved to California to get married again. And I stayed and lived with my best friend at the time and his family. And I'm really grateful for that experience, actually, because that was a big Catholic family, five kids. I didn't come from that background, and they were a hardworking family, and they taught me the value of hard work.
Well, you got your degree at the acclaimed NYU Tisch School of the Arts in film direction, and you worked professionally as a film and TV or film and video editor for a time. So tell us where along the way you discovered that you liked being on the other side of the camera.
Well, I didn't actually get my degree from Tisch. I started there, and then I ran out of money. I was an actor the whole time. I had moved to New York as an actor and was trying to get, trying to find work, basically, and trying to, you know, sign up with the right agents, so on and so forth. So I realized, all right, I don't need to... I mean, the best thing I could do at that point was to if someone else wasn't going to hire me, was to direct my own work. So I went to Tisch, loved it, great experience, was there for a short period of time. And then, like I said, I ran out of money. So I got a job working for a small production company. They were some of the, one of the first production companies in New York to have the Avid, which is an editing software for computers back in the day. So I went to work for them as an assistant and got my feet wet doing production coordinating and editing, everything that they would throw at me. And I was sneaking out at lunchtime to go on auditions, unbeknownst to them at the time. I would take these incredibly long lunches, and they would always ask me, where were you? And I'd have to come up with some story about, oh, I was waiting in a really long sandwich line. So I ended up booking a job. This amazing casting director who used to work at Loving brought me over, and I had auditioned for her about a year previously, and then I got a call from her out of the blue, and she said, come over. I think I finally have a role for you. Not knowing what that was, I, of course, dashed out, went across town on the subways and auditioned or met with her again. And that gave me the role of Danny Roberts on Loving, which at the time was a very small role. And then after working there for a period of months, they offered me a contract role. So then I had to quit the production company job and explain everything to them. Fortunately, they're incredibly generous people and very understanding. And as they say, the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Well, Danny was your first soap role, started on Loving, and then it became The City that same year. So that was a pretty big deal in daytime, and also just setting the show the way they did, or resetting the show the way they did. So what was it like for you to be part of that transition?
It was a whirlwind. There was a lot of great ideas at the time. They're trying to create a daytime show in the same technical vein as NYPD Blue, where we were shooting a lot of Steadicam footage, wireless microphones, and shooting on location around New York City. So it had huge aspirations, and it was very expensive, and ultimately it failed. Ultimately, I don't think the audience really wanted it, to be honest with you. I think the daytime audience loves their format and always has and always will. There's a familiarity there that's not something people want to change.
I agree with that, generally speaking.
Yeah, you must. I mean, you guys have seen it all. So, you know, when shows try to push the envelope too far on the technical aspects, I don't think the audience really is embracing it.
Well, it's not something as a viewer I want to see. I think you have an expectation of what you're getting when you watch a soap. And I do understand that the idea that, oh, well, if we just put it in a new, you know, location, it'll be different. If it's more modern, it'll be different. And I just don't feel that that goes with traditional soap viewing. And this is still a very traditional model that I feel they need to follow.
And when I was working with Naomi, the actress who plays Lee, on Bold and the Beautiful, she's fairly new to daytime. So we had a lot of conversations about the difference between daytime and shooting prime time and shooting features. She's done a lot of work in prime time and features. And I said, this is nothing like that. This is closer to, as I explained to Mara, this is closer to like a Brechtian play where you're facing the audience and speaking your lines directly to the audience. If we turn our back to the camera, and try to speak, we generally get cut and we have to redo it because they want to see what the actors are saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. When I think of Danny Roberts, I think of Ally. I think of Laura Wright as your love interest. What stands out to you about working with her way back when?
Well, Laura was really generous. She introduced me to her agent at the time. She was really generous as an actor to rehearse with. And, you know, she was paired up with another actor when I first came on, and then he left the show. And so they put us together. I'm not sure the audience ever embraced that because I was part of my character was part of the reason why the other character left the show. So it was difficult for the audience to sort of, all right, this guy forced that other character out in a bad way. How do we embrace, why would she be in love with him? But, you know, that does happen in life, as we all know. We persevered and pushed on. But I think Danny had a bunch of romances at the time. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, and I think he ended up with Morgan Fairchild's character at one point.
Mm. Well, not bad. Well, when you do look back on your time as Danny, what are the names other than Laura that jump out to you as having been a big presence in your experience there?
Well, I'm still very close friends with Randy Mantooth and one of the guys behind the scenes named Brendan Higgins, who's now the stage manager at Young and the Restless. And so I made a lot of some lifelong friendships from that show. And, you know, that was a different time. That was a time when guys like Randy and George Palermo could just constantly be playing practical jokes on the set. And they were generally on the rest of us. And we laughed and we had a good time and we were able to take our time shooting. And none of that exists anymore. Now it's really a fast, fast paced shoot, as you guys know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you take the show's cancellation? Was it crushing or did you take it in stride?
You know, I was kind of a little too new to be crushed by it. And I was young. And when you're young, you always assume there's another one around the corner. And for me, I was fortunate because I auditioned for primetime shows right when that was canceled and was offered pilots on my first two auditions. So I was extremely fortunate. And one of them was a guaranteed on the air. So we went with that one, which was a show called Time Cop. So, you know, ABC moved me from New York to Los Angeles, and I started a life in Los Angeles and working on that show. So, you know, I was fortunate.
You bounced back pretty quickly.
I bounced back quickly, and then that show was canceled. So, you know, that's when I had to really learn my lesson. get the slap across the face that the Hollywood business will give you every now and then.
I remember Time Cop, certainly. It was 1997, the TV adaptation of the Jean-Claude Van Damme film. You played Officer Jack Logan. So just tell us about your experience of doing Time Cop.
It was great. It was exhausting. I was shooting 16-hour days. I was doing most of the stunts for the show, which I wanted to do. And I did have a great couple of stunt coordinators, stuntmen that filled in for me on the big stuff. But I did a lot of the fighting scenes and, you know, jumping off of second stories and stuff like that. But it was very fast paced. It was a real lesson for me. You know, I was learning about an international audience versus a national audience, how that plays into how the show is written. We had a storyline that we shot the pilot in that took place in a country, and then that country turned out to be one of the major financial providers for the show, and so they had to rewrite the whole pilot. We had to shoot a whole different storyline and city because the original country and storyline, they didn't like the storyline that we had provided them.
Wow.
So yeah, you're running into all kinds of interesting business aspects that you don't necessarily want to deal with as an actor, but you're forced to, because all of a sudden they're saying, all right, everything you just shot, we're not going to use it. We're going to reshoot everything. And that's really costly too for the network. So it was a lesson, I think, all around.
Well, after Time Cop in 1998, you spent a season on the cult fave show Charmed, where you played another officer, this Inspector Andy Trudeau, who was the first love of Shannon Doherty's crew. So what stands out to you about your 21 episode run on that show?
Well, I wasn't green by then. So, and I'm not just speaking as an actor, I'm talking about the working on a network show and having that show be canceled, because that had now happened for Loving, The City, and also Time Cop. So I didn't go into it with many hopes and expectations. I went into it literally showing up, doing the work, and going home. So it wasn't a lot of fun for me because I didn't allow it to be. And that's you know, that was just me being jaded at the time. But the work was good, and the writing was good, and the show had a great audience. So it took off, but I needed to leave at the end of the first season. So I asked the producers if they would let me go, and they spoke to Aaron Spelling, who said if he doesn't want to stay, we're not going to make him stay. And so they let me out of my contract. So, and then they wrote me a beautiful ending on the show, a very heroic ending for Andy Trudeau. So that was a great, you know, it's a great ending for me on the show. They were there was a lot of respect there, which was great.
Well, more primetime appearances followed, and one we must ask you about was in 2001 when you played a conquest of Samantha's named Brad on Sex in the City, which airs all the time on E. I'm sure you're aware. So tell us about working with Kim Cattrall and just being part of such a buzzy show.
Buzzy is right. I mean, that show was so hot when I stepped in to do a guest star spot. I had auditioned a few times for those same producers and casting directors. Previous scripts that I auditioned for, I didn't like that much. I didn't think they were that funny. And then when this one came to me and was offered to me, I was thrilled because it was just great scenes. And I got to work with Kim, and she's fantastic. And I met her on location in Manhattan. I'd always wanted to shoot, since The City, I'd wanted to shoot a primetime show on location in Manhattan. Because as you know, you guys know, living in New York, when you're on the streets in New York, anything can happen. You know, you get truck drivers yelling at you, people swearing at you, and it's just a riot. And so I got the chance to do that. I walked up and saw this huge production right near the, right near, I think it was around 44th and 5th Avenue where we shot. Everything was, the street was blocked off. Cab drivers were honking and they were angry. And we, you know, we just sat down in our chairs, waited for them to say action. And then we started rolling. But Kim told some amazing, hilarious stories about shooting that show while we were waiting. So I enjoyed that shoot a lot. It was great. Particularly one about Sonia Braga. She had worked with the previous episode. And so if you guys are familiar with that episode with her and Sonia Braga, you'll kind of get an idea of what she was telling
me. Yes, that was when Samantha had a relationship with a woman.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
I've seen them all. So the following year in July, you returned to daytime, joining General Hospital as Luis Alcazar, the head of the Alcazar crime family. So how did your daytime comeback come about?
Yeah, so I believe I, in between, had gone to Africa to shoot a film with Ron Perlman and Mia Sara. And then I was offered a short-term role on General Hospital for about 4 months, basically to bring Vanessa Marcel's character back to the show. And so I said, great, I'll do the short-term role. I'll be done by pilot season and then start working hopefully on primetime again. So I started doing the role on GH as Luis Alcazar and just really enjoyed it. It was a great role. Great, you know, people behind the scenes. And so that role was up in 4 months. They had always planned on killing him off once Vanessa's, once Brenda was brought back to the canvas. So they killed Luis off, but then Brian Franz, the head of daytime at the time, came to me, stopped me in the hallway and said, we're going to bring you back. I said, okay. And we're going to have you steal Sonny's wife. And I was like, you might want to run that by him. And I don't know whether they did or not, but anyway, I came back and that was the storyline. So I came back, and when I came back, I was able to have more of an input into the character. And so I had a vision of him in the middle of the night with long hair and a beard and some cowboy boots. And so that's how he came back on the canvas playing Luis's brother, Lorenzo. And we talked about who Lorenzo was. I talked with the head writers about who he was. We decided that if Luis was the older brother, Sonny from The Godfather, then Lorenzo is Michael Corleone type. When he comes back on the canvas, basically saying he's reluctant to go into the family mafioso business or the mafia business. So yeah, we just rode that train for a while, which was fun.
Well, I mean, but what did you think? You were coming in to play Luis for a few months. That role's, you know, done. Did you want to stay as Luis? Like, was there ever a chance, like a time when you thought, oh, I'm having a good time, maybe this could be extended?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I ever said I want to stay as Luis. But when they came back and offered me the role of Lorenzo, when I got a chance to actually put some input into it, then I really got excited by coming back and doing something that I hadn't done before. Because as you guys know, you know, all I ever wanted to do in this business was be a chameleon. You know, every role, if it doesn't challenge me, then I'm not really interested in it. If it's not something different than I've already done, then I'm not really interested in it. And that role was very different than Luis. You know, he was much more romantic. He was, as I said, you know, he was very educated, being a professor before he was drawn into the family business. So you know, there were a lot of layers to him that I enjoyed. That I enjoyed from show to show, and the show, the character was well written. You know, he was smart, and he was reluctant, but if he needed to be, and if he was pushed, and if somebody was threatening his family, he could be ruthless too. So it was a lot of dynamics to Lorenzo.
Well, you were, such a good bad guy that Maurice Bernard, who plays Sonny, recently told me that he thinks you were the very best rival he ever had on the show. I think it's sort of a thankless job in the GH universe to be the guy gunning for Sonny and Jason because they're kind of always going to win. But tell us about, working with Maurice and also with Steve Burton, who plays Jason.
Well, that's very generous of Maurice, and I'm surprised, but pleased at the same time. Maurice, I've always respected Maurice's work, and I think I've told him that on a couple of occasions. And when I was playing Luis, we as actors got along great. And then when I came on to play Lorenzo and they had this storyline where I was stealing Carly, we didn't get along anymore as well as we used to. So that was hard for me because, I'm in there to do my job and still have relationships outside of work. So there was always that dynamic between the two of us when we were working. And it was an exciting time because we were constantly challenging one another on screen. And it was good for the show. I always said that. I said conflict is great for these roles. And it's great for the Sonny Jason storyline too, because if they always win, then the audience always knows what to expect, and that's predictable, and that's not interesting, at least to me as an audience member. I like the unpredictable. I like watching Game of Thrones when the lead of the show is killed after the first 10 episodes or whatever that was, and I was left with my mouth gaping open. I'm like, wait, you can't kill him? What do you take the family after that? But of course, the show only went on to larger and greater things. So that's great for a show. I think it's great when you don't know that there's always a character or two that are always going to win every battle they have. I find that incredibly boring. So so for me as an audience member, I enjoyed when we were able to go, in different directions.
Well, for a time, Alcazar was involved with Carly, and you got to work with three different actresses in the role. So first, tell us about working with the first of them, Tamara Braun.
Oh, Tamara, what a joy. What a gem. What a generous actor. What a lovely person. Yeah, we're still good friends. I don't see her all that often because I have kids now, but we do send each other, little texts every now and then when someone's doing well on a show or working on something. So we stay in touch, and I'm glad that she's had so much success too. So yeah, working together with her was it was easy because she was willing to dig deep, and she, what I mentioned earlier about there being conflict and making the show richer by putting these very successful characters at risk, and she certainly did that when we were doing GH. Some people didn't like it, the fact that Carly was interested in Lorenzo. Some people did like it, but at the end of the day, she wasn't afraid to go there. And I think that makes her, a very smart and capable actor. So, I don't have anything other than saying that. She's terrific.
In 2005, when Tamara left, first Jennifer Bransford took over as Carly briefly. I think she was the Carly that actually married you on the show. And then Laura Wright assumed the part. Right. So you got to reunite 20 years down the line with your first soap love. So what was it like working with her again?
Well, we didn't get a lot of time together because I left the show shortly after that. But I remember when they were talking about hiring her, the executive producer asked me about her because they had never worked with her before. And I told her, I said, she is Carly. I said, you guys are going to hire the right person. She's, she's going to nail that role and you're going to be happy. And if obviously that's completely true. She's been on longer than I was on the show. So she's left an indelible mark on that role. And I think the audience really enjoys that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned in 2007, you opted to leave the show, much to the dismay of GH fans. So talk us through why you made that decision.
I think that the role had come to a point of where he wasn't being exactly what we spoke about earlier, where he wasn't able to win against his foes. There wasn't any unpredictability. So when it became predictable, it was hard for me. I didn't enjoy it because I don't like going in and being the fall guy and being the guy that, you know, the character that constantly loses. I find that incredibly boring. And so it was time for me to go.
Well, the following year, your real life changed quite dramatically. You tied the knot with your wife, Maya. And in 2010, you welcomed the first of your two beautiful daughters. So this is a big question, but how did life change for you in the span of those few years when you became a husband and a father?
Well, when I married Maya, and then we deliberately took a year honeymoon before we started trying to have children. And then when we started, Ava was, Maya got pregnant. And then Ava was born, and I think she was about 2.5 months old Maya was pregnant with Ava when Frank Valentini contacted me for One Life to Live, asked me if I would be interested in coming back to New York to shoot that. And then Ava was born, and then we moved to New York with a newborn. So that was incredibly stressful and complicated, trying to find an apartment in New York City. I was there for, I think, 3 days, and I had to shoot a number of shows during that time, and then also run out and try to find an apartment for my new nuclear family.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult. And then I came back, and then I came back to Los Angeles and packed everything up. I remember I was packing in the rain and bringing everything into the storage units in the rain. I had some friends helping me out, thank God. And we got everything in, and then seemed like we got on a plane the next day and flew to New York and found ourselves there between Christmas and New Year's and with a newborn and no apartment. The apartment wasn't ready yet. So and then I started shooting shortly after New Year's Day, and we then, you know, got the apartment set up, and I think we actually kept unopened boxes in that apartment the entire time we were there the first year. We just did not have the time or the energy to unpack everything. So it was a crazy time, but again, another great role. I was able to put my two cents in on as well for Tomas Delgado. And I think the only stipulation that ABC had at the time for hiring me was that he be related to Taya, who was of Latin origin. So Tomas had to be of Latin origin. So again, I was speaking Spanish, like I was with Lorenzo, and then he became multinational with a multinational, you know, backstory, and so he was also speaking French, and he was trying to keep secrets from everybody. So there was another great
painter.
Yes, he was a painter.
When
he was first introduced, we thought he was just a painter, and then we found out
he was actually
on the lam. Yeah, from several people.
As one painter is.
So
now your love interest on that show was Cassie DePive as Blair. So tell us about working with Cassie.
Cassie, another extremely generous actress, or actor, I should say. Sorry, I'm old school. And okay. And she, wow, what a beautiful person to work with on a daily basis. Just a spark of joy every morning, and really willing to do the work. Always prepared. Never any issues with things taking too long because, you know, she wasn't ready. She was always ready. And she had a lot to handle too at the time. I remember with her son and looking after him, and he was having some surgery at the time. And so, you know, I've just been blessed with a lot of great co-stars over the years. And she was definitely one of them.
So Tomas was part of one of just the, you know, soapiest, most complicated storylines that Daytime has told, which was the tale of two Todds. I think so. You've got...
Oh, the two Todds. You know,
that was a little labyrinthine. But you got to work with both Todds, Trevor St. John and Roger Howarth. What were they like to work with?
Different, obviously. When I got there, I don't think Trevor wanted to be there. And I don't think that's any secret, but, I loved Trevor. I loved working with him. A great sense of humor, amazing sense of humor. And we got some really interesting work, done in front of the camera. And then he left, and this was before, you know, the two Todds. At that point, it was just one Todd who was originally played by Roger and then Trevor and then back to Roger. So then Roger came on. I had never worked with Roger. I had met him once at a charity fundraiser in New York City years ago. And he was very quiet. I remember meeting when I met him the first time. And it was nice to see that by the time he and I had actually worked together on One Life, that he had opened up a bit, and we were able to have some great conversations during that time. I remember we were comparing notes on a book we had both read, and Roger, you know, at that point, I think had been through a lot, trying to live in Los Angeles and then coming back to New York. And so, yeah, he was in a good place, and the role benefited from it. The show, when we knew the show was going off the air, we found out that there were going to be two Todds.
So earlier this year, of course, B&B wisely snapped you up to play Jack Finnegan, Finn's adoptive and biological father, and the ex-lover of Kimberlyn Brown's Sheila. So tell us all about how you came to join the B&B family.
The way I came to join them was fairly simple. It was a matter of the casting office reaching out to my representation and asking if I'd be interested. The timing was perfect because we'd all been locked down due to the coronavirus, and I had shot a pilot last fall, last October in Colorado, and I was waiting for that to be picked up. But at the time it hadn't been, and I believe when I was in my motel room in Colorado on the side of a highway, it was really glamorous. I turned on the television in the middle of the day, and there were my friends working, acting on television during the day. And I was incredibly happy for them, but also jealous because they had jobs that they knew they could come back to the next week. And with coronavirus, I really didn't know what the future held, and I really didn't know how long we were going to all be locked down. So when Bold and the Beautiful came knocking, I jumped at the opportunity, and I knew it was for a short period of time. Not something to, you know, that was going to go on for too long, but I jumped at it because I just thought, all right, now's the time to do this, so that I can, you know, keep my own mental health in the right place. And I'm not just staying at home, quarantining for God knows how long. And so we started working, and then I was fortunate when I started working that I think 2 weeks prior, they had just stopped their social distance acting on the show. So I didn't have to act with Tanner from 6 feet away. We could actually, you know, I could actually put my arm around him as my son, and we could have face-to-face conversations. And I had a lovely meeting with Brad Bell before I started, where we discussed a little bit about the character, but I wasn't told a lot. I was told a bit, but not a lot. And so things unwrapped and were unveiled as we were all receiving the scripts. And then it was a question of, oh, okay, now Jack Finnegan has to do this dance between being a good husband and father, and also being a man who kept huge secrets from his wife and son. And now he has to try to keep them by dancing with the devil. Right. So that's where we're at right now, where mm-hmm. Jack is trying to dance, do the dance with Sheila, where she doesn't reveal his secrets. And in return, she gets one last meeting with Finn and Hayes. Yeah.
You did have some friends in the cast going in, Scott Clifton, who you had worked with on GH when he played Dylan. And you mentioned that you knew Torsten Kay, who plays Ridge, from your early soap days. So how did you know Torsten? Had you just crossed paths in New York?
Yeah, Torsten and I crossed paths again. Well, you know, both working for the same network and back in the days, I don't even want to say when. I'd run into him, generally at functions for the network or functions for a charitable event in New York City. But, you know, Torsten's always been a real gentleman and a lovely man. And I'm grateful that I've gotten to know him through shooting this. And we've actually had a really great rapport. And he's been a gem. He's been really great in ushering me into the show, which he's been on for a long time. And he gets where I'm coming from, which is a veteran in this business for a long time and having done a lot of different things, films and prime time and daytime and understanding where we're both at, you know, raising families.
Mm-hmm. Both dads of two daughters, might I add.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We talked a little bit about that.
You are rocking an absolutely fantastic mustache as Jack. Talk us through.
That's debatable.
who wants to fight me on it? I think it's fabulous. I think you told me that your wife likes it, so she's not going to get in the ring with me over it.
No. She's when I met, I had a full beard, so she's pretty much seen all incarnations of my facial. Yeah.
Well, talk us through the facial hair decisions that had to be made in advance of your B&B debut and how this look won.
Well, when I shot the pilot in Colorado last year, I had more of a biker mustache and a soul patch underneath. And he spoke with a bit of a Southern accent, although he wasn't from the South, but what people generally refer to as a Southern accent, but it was actually more of a Arizona, New Mexico accent. So that I just kept that look after I finished shooting, because I never knew if we were going to go back and start shooting the next episode or when the show was going to get picked up or what was going on. So I just kept it because it's easier to shave than it is to try to grow it back quickly. And then B&B called, and I sent them a picture of what I look like now. And I don't know if they were thrilled or not with the facial hair. So I went in to see Mr. Bell, and then I went down to hair and makeup, and I talked to them about it just before we started shooting. And we decided just to go with the mustache. There's a lot of guys on the show that have beards. So we decided just to go with the mustache. And then I found that the mustache and his name, Jack Finnegan, inspired me with the character to dig a little deeper and write this backstory for him. Not so much the mustache, but more his name and his cultural background. And then I started working with wardrobe on the way he dressed, which I wanted to him to be a little more of, when he's casual, he's more of European casual, old European casual than young American casual. He's not wearing, t-shirts, He's wearing button-down shirts and vests. So they were really open to that, which was fantastic. It was an amazing woman running wardrobe over there now. And so we had a really nice rapport, and we started working. You know, when you're working collaboratively on these roles, it's always better for me as an actor because I get their input too. And that only makes, I can't think of everything, you know, and so when you're working together, you're creating a character, you're creating a show, and you're creating something that I think is interesting for the audience. You're not, nothing simple about Jack Finnegan. You know, he doesn't just pop on screen and you're like, oh, I've seen that guy before. I mean, at least I hope not. Maybe he is, but I hope not. I hope he's different than things that that people have seen, at least on this show.
Definitely is. So tell us about your experience thus far working with Tanner Noglin, who plays your son Finn, and Naomi Matsuda, who plays Jack's wife Lee.
Both fantastic. They're both very generous actors. As I mentioned, Naomi and I had a lot of conversations about daytime versus primetime versus films. She's very easy to work with and very professional. And so that made, you know, us as a couple, made it easier for us to jump into both our roles. And I love, actually, I absolutely love when she and I are working and she has the sternness about her character where she's just looking through Jack. You know, and making him feel, oh, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done or said that. she's that tough wife, you know, who's not going to stand for a hell of a lot, which makes her character really strong. And then Tanner is also a very generous actor, and he's... you know, been there longer than both of us. So he's now the veteran on the show and, you know, kind of schooling us on how this show works versus other shows. And he's been, as I mentioned, very generous about speaking to me behind the scenes about this and about that and sharing stories about what it was like to shoot during social distance acting on the show when he was, at one point, I think he was doing all the scenes opposite a green screen, which is interesting for daytime because that's more like a sci-fi than a daytime show or a Marvel movie. and you know, Tanner's like a superhero. That guy he's gorgeous and super fit. And, you know, I just feel blessed that he's playing my son because it only makes me look better. But and he plays the role so innocently. And let me tell you, doing innocent in acting is one of the hardest things to do. It's underrated. It's underappreciated. But when you have a veteran actor, which Tanner is, and you get this beautiful innocence from the character, it's a tribute to him and it's a tribute to what he's doing because he knows better. He knows that Finn shouldn't be doing these things. And Finn should be smacking his dad upside the head and say, Dad, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, that's not the way the roles are playing out. So he's doing a great job.
Well, Jack didn't look like he was enjoying it much, but he did have a front row seat to the big shocker that Sheila was A, back in town, and B, Finn's mother when she crashed the Finn-Steffi nuptials. I really have to give a big shout out to your fraught looks and your grimaces throughout all of that, because I really did think that they added just a lot of texture to those scenes. But let's talk about Kimberlyn Brown, who plays Sheila. So did you know from the start that Jack was going to be a part of the Sheila story, or did the name Sheila even mean anything to you? Like, did you have an awareness of the character's notoriety?
I did have an awareness. I think the exact words someone told me before shooting were, you're going to be working with the show villainous. So yes, I knew there was a lot of backstory there. I know she has great history on the show, and have learned since the impact that her character has when she returns to the show from the audience point of view, they absolutely love it. And I hadn't worked with her in the beginning. In the beginning, I wasn't working with her at all. So it was just this anticipation of having these two characters connect. And then what was that going to be like? And honestly, you don't really know what that's going to be like until you work with the actor. You get the scripts. It could turn out like this. It could turn out like that. And fortunately, Kimberlyn is very easy to work with from my vantage point. And we just sat down in our dressing rooms and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. We had a lot of dialogue to do together. And we had to come up with our own individual backstories for this relationship. And that's interesting too. We haven't really talked about our backstories together. I mean, it's in the script, you know, that they had this fling, but it doesn't dig too deep. So we have our own individual backstories, but we haven't actually spoken to each other about that. And for some reason it's working on mm-hmm. camera. So I'm not going to mess with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Jack's been such a great addition to the cast, as Bradley Bell says in our new issue. But tell us in general, your experience there so far, are you having fun? Would you like to see Jack be a more permanent member of the cast?
I'm having a great time. I think I've expressed that to all kinds of people there, whether it's actors or crew members or producers, or all kinds of people. I just am really enjoying the experience. And that's not always true, you know. I don't want to sound like I'm kissing up, because I'm not. I mean, I honestly enjoy the cast and crew there. They're really, really phenomenal. And they've got wonderful actors on that show, you know, really wonderful actors who, when they're giving us a scene to do, they're digging deeper than what's on the page, and they're bringing something that's not necessarily there. And I like to sit back as an audience member and watch them work, you know, whether I'm sitting in my dressing room and watching the feed on the monitor of what we're shooting live that day, and I'm just watching some of these actors work, and I'm just like, man, it's just great work. And that's inspiring for me to work. And, you know, I mean, that's all, at the end of the day, that's all I can ask for on a job where you're there every day. You want to be inspired. You want to be pushed to a higher level in your own work. And that definitely takes place every day on that set.
Well, it was like a very big deal in the soap world that B&B cast Ted King. It was a big deal for fans to have you back in daytime. What does that mean to you to know that, you know, you certainly made a big mark on this genre over the years?
Honestly, I don't think about it much. I just try to keep pushing forward. I haven't spent much time reflecting on my career. Doesn't interest me at this point. Maybe when I'm sitting in a rocking chair, it will. But right now, I'm just trying to reach a higher level in my own work, and hopefully that inspires people to watch.
Well, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to say to perhaps your newer B&B fans and the fans who have followed you and your daytime career for over 25 years now?
I couldn't begin to answer that question. That's a huge question. Yeah, you know, the only thing you can say as an actor is that this is one of the only art forms you can do where you have to have an audience. I can't do this in my living room by myself, otherwise I fail. So, you know, to have the audience that I've had over the years, to have people that have followed me in my career since The City is remarkable and astounding, and I'm very grateful.
Well, it was so great to catch up with you today, and we are just so thrilled you could join us, and we couldn't be happier to see you on Bold and Beautiful, and hope to see more of you.
Thank you very much.
All right, Ted, hope to talk soon. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Ted King for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.